welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Mark, we're going to talk today about omega-3 fatty acids and heart disease. How are you doing?
I'm good. In fact, I just was listening to the Diane Rehm show on the drive-in, and her guest was extolling the virtues of omega-3 fatty acids and how wonderful they are for, you know, everything from, you know, healthy skin to preventing dementia. And I thought, well,
let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So, just historically, going back a few decades, researchers found that there were low rates of coronary heart disease among Greenland Eskimos who consumed large amounts of seafood, who slept in igloos, who wore multi-layers of outerwear, and who didn't change their underwear daily. Subsequent studies showed that the actual protective factor turned out, for heart disease at least, turned out to be more related to the consumption of fish and less to their attire, on specific long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids that are found in fish oils. These oils are thought to be incorporated into cell membrane phospholipids throughout the body, and they're stored in adipose tissue as triglycerides. So on the one hand, proponents argue that the physiologic effects of fish oil occur within very quickly, within weeks of regular use, and may result from altered cell membrane flexibility and cell receptor responses. Again, it makes one wonder how we evolved to have fish oil receptors. That's another story. The results, the protective effect.
Just flopped up on a beach, you know, a couple million years ago. And
exactly. And we somehow, those that had fish oil receptors had a survival advantage or something. The thought, I think, unless you tell me otherwise, is that these omega-3 fatty acids are thought to have an antiarrhythmic effect, although I guess there's some controversy around that. This is an article. It was published in JAMA. It was published in 2012. Volume 308, page 1024, and it's a systematic review. What did they find, Mark?
Yeah, this is a topic that has been much studied. I also teach a class here at University of Georgia on evidence-based practice, and when we do treatment meta-analysis, I have the students during a three-hour period go through sort of a mini meta-analysis, and we came to the same conclusions that there's no evidence of improved all-cause mortality. So they found 20 studies that were, after careful search of Medline and the Cochrane Registry and other sources, and they included studies that supplemented with diet, supplemented with supplements. There were about 68,000 patients, and most of the studies were reasonably long, about 2 years, which is, you know, not great. You'd like to see a little longer in terms of finding important health benefits. So the studies, while there were a lot of them and a lot of patients, they were relatively short. Most studies were well-designed. They didn't all. When we looked at the studies, allocation concealment wasn't really very well specified, especially in some of the older studies. And they didn't find, you know, their conclusion of the reviewers was that there was no benefit in terms of all-cause mortality, cardiac death, sudden death, myocardial infarction, or stroke. Now, I looked at the study in quite a bit of detail, and, you know, I think there were some caveats there. Now, they actually did find if you use, you know, P less than 0.05 as your measure of statistical significance, they did see a reduction in cardiac death. That was the one outcome where there was a statistically significant reduction, but they said, well, we looked at five different outcomes, so you really have to use a 0.01 cutoff, and so that one didn't quite make it. So there was, you know, some benefit. Now, that was really only seen in the secondary prevention studies. I think another important point to draw out of this is most of the people taking these omega-3 oils are taking it for primary prevention.
Right.
And there has not been a single study of just primary prevention. They've all been secondary prevention, or they've had a mix of patients that are primary or secondary.
So let me just interrupt for a second, Mark, just for the listeners, just to make sure that
So
by primary prevention, we're talking about people who don't have any heart disease who are taking it to prevent the onset of heart disease. By secondary prevention, you're referring to patients who have been diagnosed with heart disease and are trying to mitigate future effects from coronary artery disease. Is that right?
That's right. And my wife needs to listen to this. She's a vegetarian who takes omega-3 oils, and I just tell her just eat salmon, but, you know, she's a vegetarian. I think you are also, aren't you, Mike?
I am. I eat salmon, but there you have to worry about the mercury.
So primary prevention, secondary. So none of the studies were primary prevention, yet that's what I think the majority of people probably taking it are primary prevention. And when you look at when they broke it down by secondary prevention, so patients with heart disease, versus mixed populations, some primary, some secondary, every single outcome, there was absolutely no benefit in the mixed primary-secondary prevention group. There was greater potential benefit or benefit seen in the secondary prevention group. So I think, you know, my takeaway is there may be some benefit in the secondary prevention group. There's absolutely none in the primary prevention group. And so I think in terms of cardiac death, you know, all of the effects, stroke, there was absolutely no benefit. Actually, the hazard ratio and so on showed a little bit of was on the wrong side, but all the other ones were on were consistently beneficial with borderline statistical significance. So, you know, I think if there's a benefit, if there's an effect, it's quite small. Say that. It's only there in patients who already have known heart disease, and it's probably limited to cardiac death, perhaps sudden cardiac death, which seems to be the mechanism that it's purported to have.
Great. You know, I was sort of joking at the top about these Greenland Eskimos. I mean, they have been shown to have low rates of coronary artery disease. They do eat lots of seafood. But, you know, perhaps it is, you know, a combination of factors or something else. It's not just the seafood that leads to their low risk of coronary artery disease. Also, you do point out that they only followed these folks here for an average of about 2 years. So maybe that, you know, if you start taking these in childhood, that's where you see the biggest effects.
Yeah, you know, it's not a settled question. I kind of hope this study, they would find enough good data to kind of settle this one way or the other. And I would say it's not settled. I'm pretty comfortable not recommending it for patients as primary prevention, but, you know, certainly, you know, salmon, seafood, part of a healthy diet, as long as you're not, you know, overdoing the,
right.
Get your mercury count regularly.
Exactly. Talk to you again next week, Mark. Thanks.
All right, see you.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.